Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Silman and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another wonderful conversation that I know you will thoroughly enjoy and receive great insight and enlightenment, actually. For those of you who are visiting for the first time to my show, please go over to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com. I have all these special free reports available for you. So just opt in there and continue the education that is so important. You know, my purpose in this show is really to empower you with truthful information so you can make informed decisions. And that's really our goal in life, is being informed. We each have to make the best choice for ourselves, but we need to get the knowledge and education in order to do that. And to help us gain a much more education, knowledge, and insight, today we have such a privilege to have Dr. Michael Roizen with us. He is the four-time number one New York Times bestselling author and co-founder and originator of the popular RealAge.com website. He is chief wellness officer and chair of the Wellness Institute of the Cleveland Clinic and chief medical consultant for the Dr. Oz Show. And he has his latest book that's out called This Is Your Do-Over, The 7 Secrets to Losing Weight, Living Longer, and getting a second chance at the life you want. So this is such an honor and a privilege to have you with us, Dr. Roizen. Welcome to the show.
Cheryl, the privilege and the honor is mine, and I hope we can help make a difference for your audience members.
I am sure we will. And I want to start off by asking you this question. You came from a very prestigious and traditional medical background. You've achieved a lot in the medical system. What was it that changed your approach to this more holistic, embracing, you know, nutrition, alternative ways of healing? What was that moment, or what was that process for you?
Well, when we looked at, I'm both an internist and an anesthesiologist, and in my board training, if you will, and was running the cardiovascular anesthesia service at University of California at San Francisco. And when we looked at what caused complications and deaths, it was the age of the patient was the strongest correlate. That is, a 95-year-old had 10 times the risk of a 75-year-old, or an 85-year-old, 3 times the risk of a 75-year-old, 10 times the risk of a 65-year-old. So I said, my job in preparing patients for surgery and in taking them through and watching over them and helping them get through the intensive care unit period is to make people 10 years younger in that 2 weeks surrounding surgery. And in learning how to do that, you learned how many what were simple things that I, as a, you know, I was listed in the 1,000 best docs in America, but I didn't know most of these things. And in learning that, in trying to help people, that's where I got into helping them make themselves younger. And a lot of the things that make you younger are diet, exercise, physical activity, managing stress, learning how to put passion in your life, what we call the common things. And in fact, the new book is based on the 18 million people who've repeatedly taken that free Real Age test. So we then took it and made it into a test that anyone could take and find out what they could do to make themselves younger. And in doing that, 60 million people have taken the test, and 18 million have taken it repeatedly who have made themselves younger. And in learning what those, there were 7 real secrets that these people had, or 7 deeds that they consistently did. And so that's how this whole process evolved.
You know, I love the concept of getting younger. I really believe, and this is one of my messages in the lectures and workshops that I do, is that we can get younger and healthier as we get older. And it's not just a metaphor. It actually is a reality. I've seen it because my biological age is 20 years younger than my chronological age, and I just had my carotid artery tested, and they said it, you know, looked like someone who was 20 years younger. So that's because I've done so many of the things that we're going to be talking about, and I've incorporated them in my life and gotten really serious about getting younger and healthier as I get older.
That's exactly right. So that's the key is, in fact, how does each person do that, and that's why it is so empowering, because it isn't that tough to do.
You know, and I always get upset when people say, oh, I'm just getting older, I have these aches and pains because I'm getting older, and I can't think because I'm getting older. I'm going, no, you're just unhealthy. You make some changes because you can restore all those functions if you really want to.
Right, and in fact, that's one of the key points you're bringing up, is just a really essential key point, is that the aging does not have to be accompanied by chronic disease. So the association is, in fact, a real one. We, in America, develop, 10% more of us develop a chronic disease each year. So it starts out at 20%, 22%, 24%, 26%, et cetera. It keeps growing until at age 65, the data on entering Medicare is 97% of us will have one or more chronic diseases, such as type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, obesity, osteoarthritis, et cetera. But the data from the Nurses' Health Study, from the Swedish Men's Study, are consistent. If you do 5 healthy behaviors, you have an 80 to 90% less chance of developing a chronic disease over the 20 years of the Nurses' Health Study or the Swedish Men's Study. So it's really, you get a chance to not have to have that, but it's your choice.
So if I heard you correctly, you said by the time people get into their Social Security years, 65 or older, 97% of those people have at least one chronic health condition?
Correct. That's the...
That's so shocking. That's shocking to me, you know?
That's the data that Medicare, from the large surveys of Medicare patients.
And you know, the majority of these people, if they made some of the changes that we're going to talk about today, would not have to be a statistic, would actually have better health, relieve themselves of all these compromised functionings, these aches, these pains, and be off their meds.
That's really true. And the interesting thing is they aren't that tough to do. And the other interesting thing, if you will, if you look at what we call the Nehane study, which is the National Health and Nutrition Evaluation Studies that the government does on large numbers of people every 4 years, we're getting worse. The number of women who say they do not even 10 minutes of walking any day of the week, so that's what they define as no exercise, is now over 50%. So it's hard to conceive. You know, when you say it was 17% in 1990 to 94, the Nehane's data, that same set of questions, and it's the same, it is every group of women, whether they're Hispanic or Caucasian, whether they're working or unemployed, it is the same numbers. We have literally tripled the number of people who do zero physical activity. And when you look at the men, the same questions asked to men have gone from around 13% to 47%. So as a society, we're really doing very little physical activity, and we're eating more. And when you look at our stress levels, they're much higher. We're responding to events with much higher stress, and that's what's giving us the chronic disease.
And I have to say, I'm seeing some very old 20- and 30-year-olds, you know, in terms of having chronic pain or achy joints or, you know, being overweight. You know, and even though they're younger in age, they're older in their health status. what's happening
in their body.
Right, and
they don't have to be. The great news and what we put in the book is they don't have to be that older. And that's the major message is this is under each of our controls. We get to control our genes to a large degree. If you want to know what I consider the scariest statistics, so I've said 95 or 90 actually, 7% of us have a chronic disease at age 65. Even more scary than that to me is the fact that we used to spend 50% of our health dollar in the last year of life. It is now 15%. That is, we are spending much more money managing chronic disease before we even hit 65, and that's what's costing our corporations competitiveness. It's what's costing us, if you will, the workers, every dollar of increased productivity since 2000 has gone into paying for more medical cost rather than gone into direct salary. So that's one of the major problems in America, but it's also the major problem in the world. And the only way we can stop that is to learn to manage ourselves better, if you will, make choices that are better so we don't have to have chronic disease and don't need to manage it.
So before we go into your seven secrets, I have a question to ask you. In your opinion, what has gotten us to this point?
Well, you know, you say, what is it in the culture that has changed so that we do less physical activity, we eat 400 more calories a day than we did for over 100 years. That is, from 1858 to 1983, we ate the same number of calories per person in America. And since 1983, from 1983 to 2000, we increased 2% compounded a year. We've kept the same good. That's the good news since 2000. We haven't kept increasing, but it is now 400 calories more a day. And we have much higher levels of stress, and it really is the culture we live in. It's been acceptable to eat anytime, anywhere, any place, and it's been acceptable to go to drive-throughs and drive-in, if you will, food, and to not even get out to walk into the restaurant. And we do less cooking of whole food, if you will, more, if you will, prepared food or more takeout food. And so the culture has changed. And really, I think it was the food culture that changed first, and then technology has made it even easier to be, if you will, have more stress in our lives.
Mm-hmm. So
what do you think, Cheryl? Now, you get to interview a lot of people. Let me turn the table on you and say, what do you think?
Well, I think it's the perfect storm, isn't it? It's toxic foods, it's toxic environment, it's a stressful lifestyle. I think we just have lost our way. We've lost our understanding of what creates a healthy body, healthy diet. I think, you know, it's just everything. It's just and it's the genomic expression. I know you're really involved with genes. In your book, you talk about the whole epigenetic side of things. I do a lot of testing on nutrigenomics with my patients, and sometimes I do three generations of in the same family. I look at their genes, and, you know, I just see by that third generation, the genes have been altered, the genomics have been altered, their SNPs have been altered, they're more vulnerable to inflammation, oxidative stress, they can't detoxify. So I see the consequence of what past generations, the last generation and the generation before that, has passed on to the present day children. It's really scary. And the good news is, which is the purpose of your book, is how we can reverse this trend.
Yes, that is the absolute good news. It is reversible.
So
and what we did is we have a whole bunch of stories, but it is every place I go. So I was talking to an executive producer at a TV show that I was doing on Wednesday, and I hadn't. She said, "You don't recognize me," and I said, "You're right, I don't." She said, "I'm the executive producer. My name's Holly, and I changed her name for the show, obviously. She said her name's Holly, and I said, and she said, when I first saw you 5 years ago, before you gave me a plan, I was 120 pounds overweight, more than I weigh now, and I couldn't, we were trying to have children, and we hadn't been able to have them for 4 years. So I want to show you this picture. And so she showed me a picture of herself and her relatively new son. So you hear the, and it is very possible to get a do-over, and that's the key. The message is it's possible to not only get one and sustain it, and that's the key. You want to do it in a systematic enough fashion that you only have to have one more do-over in your life, and then you'll be on feeling more vibrant and vital and have more energy to do what you want to do for the rest of your life.
And that's the point. Then you're on track. You have the strategies and you have that vitality. You have your passion back, and you never want to go back to the old way. You know, you've got the plan and you're going to stick to it. So why don't we talk about those in your latest book? This is your do-over, The 7 Secrets to Losing Weight, Living Longer, and Getting a Second Chance at the Life You Want. Let's talk about those 7 secrets, Dr. Mike.
Yeah, these are the 7 things, 7 deeds, and we call them secrets because they're the ones that everyone who succeeded and stayed successful told us they did. And so the first one is to have a buddy. That is a friend, a confidant. Now, women often have confidants, but you share, if you will, brownies or baked goods with them. And this is, and health is infectious. So we want you to share your goals for your health with your buddy and have them coach you, be accountable to each other. So it isn't any old buddy, but the key was to select a buddy who will be fun, who will be energetic, but who, when you tell, I've just had a bag of cookies, won't say, you didn't save me one, or won't say, let's celebrate, let me bring over some whatever it is. What you want is someone who you can be both accountable to and will help you figure out why you did what you did if you fall off the wagon, and help you get back on it, and then devise a plan with you so you never fall off again. And that's really the key. So selecting the buddy was, it turned out to be the key thing. That is because none of us are as good as a package of chocolate chip cookies, or none of us are as good as sitting down on a couch and watching a show. And all of us respond with stress to people who do things to us. And so it is, how do we reform that so that we can take those events much more in stride, and so that we never have the times when we fall prey to just the couch or eating food that causes inflammation in our body.
And you must have found this part of that survey you were doing from The Real Age, that if you have that kind of encouragement and support system, you're more likely to succeed.
Yeah, not only are you more likely, it's almost invariable that you need it. That is, you, Dr. Cheryl, you're both a physician and you run a radio show, so you're different than most Americans. So in our executive health practice, maybe 20% of the people who climb to the top and are in this mode have enough self-determination and management, and if you will, enough willpower to defeat chocolate chip cookies. But very few of us do. And so almost invariably, the people needed a buddy and needed a positive buddy. Now, it could be an online buddy. It could be someone in another city they called once a day, as Oprah does with a phone call. But instead of just doing a phone call and talking, they're accountable to their health as well as for friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point. It could be an online, could be part of a forum, however you do it, but there is an ongoing relationship that is supportive and encouraging.
Right, and supportive, encouraging, and fun. So people want to have joy with everything they do. And one of the things that they told us, that is when we were asking about the buddies, is it was key that the buddy is someone they would have fun with, but who wasn't afraid to smack them down if they needed it.
So it's like searching for that right person who's willing to make that commitment and also wants to be part of the program as well. So
right, and many of them, that's right, many of them had said, let's get healthy together because it is infectious, and so it was a two-way street. And many of them were people who had been on, if you will, the path to health and had gotten healthier, who had been, if you will, unhealthy and gotten their own do-over and knew a little bit of, or a few of the tricks to getting there. It wasn't afraid to be critical, but was basically they were positive people.
And I really understand that because we can just get so caught up in our own world and our own addictive tendencies and habits that it's really hard to pull ourselves out or get motivated. And I just had these lessons for ballroom dancing sitting on my coupon for months. And it wasn't until I found a friend to actually partake with me that I made the commitment and got out there. So I really get that. You know, if you have somebody, you are more likely to get out and make it happen.
Yes, that's that's exactly true. I actually have those same coupons.
And you know, I was so glad I did because it was so much fun. And I'm going, oh my God, I could have had so much more fun months ago if I had done this. But you know, at least I started. It got me out of that inertia state.
No, that's right. This group on ballroom dancing, I'm as the chief wellness officer, chair of the Wellness Institute of the Cleveland Clinic, we run our program for our 40,000 employees. And a group that wanted to teach our employees ballroom dancing and dancing in general, but mainly ballroom dancing, had approached us many times. We said, we don't have a venue. We finally did it in January. And we had, I mean, to me, it was an amazing number. We had 187 couples show up, or 187 groups of people that could form. It was literally 300 and whatever it is, 70-some people came together. The first time we did this, we were blown away by the number. Usually, you know, we do run 59, I mean, we're 40,000 people, so we do run 59 different yoga classes a day. So it's an active group, if you will. But we didn't expect ballroom dancing to take off more than Zumba did.
Yeah, you know, and I'll just say one more thing about ballroom dancing, and we can move on. When couples can come together and do it, it gives a whole new life to the relationship.
Yes, and that was one of the other key do-over deeds was to keep. Was a lot of the people wanted to keep a healthy relationship in their family, and that is one of the keys was that they wanted a physical or an intimate relationship with someone else and had one or developed one as part of their do-over deeds.
Yeah, that's good. So much fun. Okay, let's go to exercise. Let's segue from ballroom dancing into exercise. What are your suggestions, your strategies, the tips you give to help us start moving again? Because you really cannot be healthy unless you are moving your body.
Yeah, although you can be healthy if you move it in ways other than the most common. But the most common way was to, and the key was to have some way of recording the steps or step equivalents you take and to work towards getting 10,000. Now, I'm going to come back. 8,000 isn't 80% of 10,000. So, meaning 8,000 gives you about 40% of the benefit of 10,000. 12,000, you get a little more benefit in calories burned and physical fitness, but it is really 10,000 that breaks down insulin resistance. So 12 isn't better from a health standpoint than
right.
10, and 8 is really not, 80 is maybe half of 10, a little less than half of 10,000. So the key is to work up to 10,000 steps because it magically breaks down insulin resistance. It breaks down the inability to take blood sugar from the blood where it poisons proteins and put it in cells where it is useful. So your sugar, when it's in your blood, does damage. Your sugar, when it's in your inside your cells, tends to be what we use for energy. So that's what you want to happen. And the 10,000 steps a day was magical. So whether, and I noticed the iPhone now has a automatic app. They put it on my phone a couple weeks ago automatically. So even if all you have is an iPhone, and I guess someplace over 250 million people in the world have iPhones. They've sold 700 million of them. So assuming doubles and triples, maybe, I don't know, 50 or 70 million Americans now have a pedometer, even though they didn't know they had it. And there's probably one on the Android, too. I just don't know that. But
there is. We
give people pedometers. And the key is to tell someone else how many steps you do and then to be accountable to yourself. So I take 10,000 steps before I go to bed, no matter what. And when I look at it at 9 o'clock like I did last night and I said, geez, I've only gotten 6,700 steps or so last night. At that time I said, okay, I'm getting on a treadmill. And I have a treadmill at home. So you don't have to walk around a table. You can take a walk outside, whatever you want to do. But be accountable so I don't go to bed without 10,000 steps a day. So the first component is 10,000 steps a day and build slowly. The second is to do resistance training. And after you've mastered both of those, and resistance training means moving your body or muscle against a weight against gravity. So whether it is push-ups or squats or whether it is lifting barbells, it is moving a weight against gravity. And once you've mastered that, and we go through the techniques to tell you what that means, it really means you're able to move or exercise, resistance exercise, for 8 of your 14 major muscle groups, and to do it in a way that gets them tired within 2 minutes. Once you're able to do that, then after a month of both doing the 10,000 and the resistance, you then move to cardio. Most people want to move to cardio right away, meaning running hard on a treadmill or doing things that raise their heart rate. The problem with that is that's when you injure yourself and have to start all over. So you don't want to go too fast. This is a program, you know, if you got type 2 diabetes or you got high blood pressure, you didn't get that overnight. It gradually occurred. And you will gradually, and much faster than you believe, get rid of it when you start doing routine physical activity and changing the food you eat.
So let me ask you this question. Do you think the programs that people are recommending to do the, short bursts of high intensity for, 60 seconds or so, even with weight training, is effective?
It is effective at getting you physically fit for health. There is no data that it is the best thing for your long-term health. Now, let me backtrack just a little bit on one statement. So if you're able to do short bursts of high intensity, it is part of what you do in that cardio world. And it does get your cardiovascular system and you're more fit. Whether that contributes to a reduction in disability as we go through life, we have no data on. Mm-hmm. We do have data that high-intensity exercise is good at releasing brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor, mm-hmm. but so is just walking. So will you get more of that at high intensity? We don't have enough data to say so. Most of us think so. So there are three components of physical activity. One is any activity such as walking, and you get credit for gardening and for swimming, etc. They all contributed to the step total or the step equivalent total. The second is resistance exercise, and the third is the cardio with some high intensity mixed in. And so the way the high intensity is really mixed in the studies is 20 seconds in either a rowing machine or a Schwinn-like bicycle, that is arm and leg, where you go all out for 20 seconds, mm-hmm. and then for 100 seconds, you do it at a regular rate, and then again 100 seconds, and then again 20 seconds, and then 100 seconds for a total 12-minute period. People really have to be in fairly good shape to do that and not injure themselves while doing that. Mm-hmm. So you really have to build up towards that. But it appears that that gives you, when you do that three times a week, those 12-minute periods give you as much benefit as what has been well established, 20 minutes at 80% of your age-adjusted maximum heart rate, three times a week. So 20 minutes, and so we talk about both of those in the book, but 20 minutes of, meaning if you're, let's just say you're 60, 60 minus 220, it's a little different formula for women than men, but this is a pretty good approximation. 60 minus 220 is 160. Take away 10%, which is take away 16. Take away another 16, so you're taking away 32 from 160, which means you've got to hit a heart rate of 128 for 20 minutes to get the maximum cardiovascular health benefit. That's not the maximum fitness. That's not the minimum, if you will, or the maximum calorie burn, but it is the what has been established for decreasing chronic disease the most over a 40-year period. So that's what we know. We have no idea if the high-intensity shorter periods do the same thing because we just haven't studied. They just haven't been studied for that long.
You know, I am such an advocate of, well, everything you're saying, but particularly for women, resistance training and building that muscle mass is so critical for healthy metabolism, for strength, for, you know, just so many key physiological functions. And I was one of those people who had low tone in my body for a long time, so I never had really muscle, you know, defined muscles. And I was determined about two and a half years ago, I was going to start building muscle mass. So I did that 2-3 times a week. I worked with weights, and I have to say it was an amazing transformation to see body put on muscle mass that I never had, particularly in my arms, you know, where women have it in their biceps and triceps. So I know it's possible, and I really want to encourage women to just get committed because you can transform your body.
Yeah, and what we know, and so what you have said is extremely important, Cheryl. So I don't want to, I want to emphasize that. So the exercise that you should do second after you start walking is resistance training. Don't go to cardio, go to resistance because it's the way of avoiding injury. And by the way, it helps you further break down metabolic resistance, that is metabolic syndrome problems, and it seems to also release brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor the way high-intensity cardio does. Mm-hmm. So, and it just, you know, women say, well, I don't want to develop big arms, or I don't want to develop a bulk up. You don't bulk up. You can develop increased tone, and it is really important for preventing frailty. So, so many women, quote, die of frailty, meaning they die of not having enough strength as they age in their hands and in their core system. So there's, you know, for the hands, people, you can squeeze balls or whatever you want to do, but that's one of the keys of avoiding frailty, keeping able to do things for yourself, is in fact strengthening your hands, whether it's squeezing balls or popping those little, I don't know what they're called, used to be wrapping, you know, stuff you wrap.
The bubble wrap things?
Yes. So there are all kinds of things for strengthening hands, but strengthening hands is something all of us should do. And that's in addition to the resistance exercise that you should do for the rest of your body. So even if you just take two balls in the car, one on your left, one on your right, don't squeeze them both at the same time unless you're in the passenger seat. But take those two squeeze balls, if you will, so you can, while you're stopping at a light, practice squeezing one. It's much safer doing that than actually texting and being diverted mentally as well. So just squeeze one and the other at the next light or whatever. But it is a really easy thing to do. And the second is, as you said, is to strengthen your core muscles. Not hard to do. You don't even need machines or weights. You can do a lunge. You can do a lunge with milk bottles filled with water if you get too strong to do a lunge by without it. But you need to get tired. Those muscle groups that you're exercising need to get tired within 2 minutes to get the benefits of resistance training.
So one last thing I want to ask you, and we can move on to the next point. Should we always be doing 10,000 steps a day? Is that like a fundamental thing?
The answer is yes. So the phrase is 10K a day, no excuses, meaning you always want to get 10,000. And it doesn't have to be walking, meaning swimming, you get 100 steps a minute. So if you swim for 30 minutes, you're getting 3,000 steps. If you garden, it's between 40 and 80 steps a minute. And you can actually put on, if you will, a Fitbit or a Garmin or one of the other devices, or just have your iPhone, see how many steps you're getting or step equivalents you're getting, so you can add it up. But you don't need, you can do it with minutes actually in the future. But it is those for step equivalents, it's the minimum that is required to get maximal health benefit as we get older.
Yeah, that's so important. I didn't realize that 10,000 steps is the magic number to reduce your insulin resistance, to actually see that kind of result, which is so fundamental. If you can keep your blood sugar, you know, managed, it's working efficiently, it's one of the keys to rejuvenating the body, staying healthy.
That's exactly right. And when you do core exercise, so if you do 20 minutes of resistance training, you're probably getting at least 2,000 steps doing it. So everything accumulates. And they're really easy steps. I do at least one walking meeting a day. When I'm on conference calls, I'm on my treadmill desk, if you will. What I mean by walking meetings, I'm meeting someone, we take a walk and discuss whatever it is we're going to discuss. I park at the furthest part in the parking lot that's in our parking lot, if you will, and walk in and walk out. So it's pretty easy for me to get 10,000. Yesterday, because of travel, I literally only had 6,600 by the time I think it was 9 o'clock rolled around, so I got the extra the extra 3,500 or 3,000, I can't remember exactly. But I don't go to bed without 10,000. That's how strong the data is and how strongly I believe in it.
You don't sound like you're on your treadmill now as we're talking.
I am. But I'm doing it in a way. I've got a hand phone, so I'm doing it in a way that hopefully, and I take off my shoes so you don't hear me clocking on the treadmill.
Well, I feel guilty. I should be walking around as we're talking as well. Okay,
no,
so what's
actually,
another?
As you may know, I host a radio show as well, and during my radio show, I'm not on the treadmill because you've got a constant. Your job is much harder than mine during this show.
I got to keep focused here.
That's right.
So what's another important point that we need to know for your do-over?
I put it in the fifth chapter, but it's probably the either first or second after the body, and that is to learn to manage stress. Stressful events happen. We don't have a lot of control over them, and our life is a fast enough pace and enough people in it that events happen that we normally respond to in stressful ways. Stress response was a very useful thing when the stressor was a woolly mammoth and he was attacking you, because your stress response increases your blood sugar and increases your heart rate and blood pressure. It lets you run away or punch the woolly mammoth in the nose. Those were useful things when it was a woolly mammoth. But now it is a event or someone cutting you off or a boss or a pressure deadline. And so those raising blood sugar only damages you. And the blood sugar, blood pressure together are things that add to inflammation. So what you want to do is to learn to manage it so you don't have a response that is your normal stress response to the event. And there are 8 different techniques, whether it's called deep breathing and you focus on belly button breathing, or whether it is meditation and you focus on saying a word or guided imagery or progressive muscle relaxation. There are 8 techniques, and everyone can have one in their back pocket or their purse so that when an event happens, you pull it out and you practice that morning for 5 minutes, morning and evening, so you can handle the chronic things. But then when the acute problem comes, you're able to manage it so that it's not a health hazardous event to you, that you are activated and can handle the event rather than it being harmful to you. So I think that's, and when we've taught this and do this, you know, a lot of people are here to lose weight, and that's what they want the second chance is. But when you teach how to manage stress, the people lose weight incidentally because they don't eat as part of their response to the event.
Yes. Yeah, there's a slow food movement happening now where people are learning to eat slowly and, you know, more mindfully, which seems to have a huge effect and benefit on reducing the amount of food and helping with weight as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. It's the, if you will, the mindful food eating or slow food eating that is savoring each piece is a way of helping that. But that's going directly at it from a quantity of food standpoint, important. But another reason we tend to eat is to soothe ourselves at time of stress. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that the stress response teaches us, because you raise your blood sugar, and then when it falls back down as the stress is abating, you want to raise your blood sugar again to keep it to the same level. That's the habit you've developed. And so the habit your body is getting used to is that higher blood sugar, damaging in and of itself, and then damaging because of the extra calories you get that add on to fat that give you inflammation over time. So the way of eating slowly is another benefit, and if you do it with some mindfulness, that is practicing mindfulness right before or after eating, that's a great way of adding the two together.
So what are some of your favorite strategies for, you know, keeping those stress levels low so you don't get caught up in those patterns?
Oh, for me, the one I pull out all the time is I put my finger on my belly button and close my eyes and just focus on my finger moving. Obviously, you can't do it in a car or while you're driving, but every other place you can pretty well put your finger on your belly button, take a breath in and breathe out. When you take a breath in, your belly button should move away from your spine, out, and as you breathe out, your belly button should move in. But just putting your finger on your belly button and focusing on it as you breathe is one of the early techniques we teach people, and it's the one that I know I can always pull out in virtually any time.
So that's a really practical little thing. It's just, I would imagine you want to practice it so when you're in a stressful situation, you will remember to do it, not get lost in your drama.
Yeah, in fact, I do it, I do it 5 minutes morning and night every day. Mm-hmm. So when I need it, I can pull it out. But it's also, by doing it routinely, I think it helps me in general. And that's what the data would say, that in general I lower my stress levels because I do this 5 minutes morning and night.
You know, you must be an interesting guy, Dr. Mike, at work. You know, you're walking and having your meetings and you know, keeping your finger on your belly button as you're breathing. You must be quite an inspiration for your staff. And
well,
ballroom
fun, you know,
dancing,
the,
you know.
The Cleveland Clinic staff, you know, we have five plans, if you will. But the Cleveland Clinic staff, 97% of our 40,000 employees use our own healthcare system, so we have accurate weights from the doctor's office. And over the last 3 years since we've been doing this, they've lost a total of 445,000 pounds that we can verify. That's real weight loss, meaning it's doctor scale weight loss. So that's if you look at that, it's a real huge thing that the clinic has done in making these programs available to our employees and in learning about them so that we can spread it to other corporations as well. So it has been a real success, but it isn't just me. If you look at our we have a skyway that joins all the buildings in our main campus, and that skyway at 6 to 7 in the morning before the shift change is really busy with people who are about to come on, walking and getting their 10,000 steps in and meditating before they go to work.
So just to kind of carry on this conversation, which is really interesting, you've actually changed the culture at the Cleveland Clinic.
Yes, that's exactly right. So part of the, is for a corporation, it is, we're a healthcare corporation, and Toby Cosgrove, our CEO, said the only way we can continue to lead healthcare in America and that we can help America get control of its own budget is by showing that a healthcare entity can have healthy employees.
And this is so inspirational for me to hear. You know, you're setting a model in place that I trust will be duplicated throughout the country, throughout the world, because, you know, you're saving money, if nothing else, and creating healthy, happy employees.
Well, that's exactly right. What we, you know, the mission in doing this was to say we've got a real problem with the prevalence of chronic disease. All you have to do is look at diabetes. When I first was out in practice, it was 4.2 million in 1974. That dates me. This year, it's 29 million diabetics. Mm-hmm. It's predicted at the low end in 2050 to go to 120 million, and the high end, 180 million in the United States. Even if you take 120 million, that amount of money to care for those 120 million would use our entire current health budget. That's with no new technology, no new drugs. It's just at the stable price we're doing now. So would arthritis, so would dementia, so would patients who have survived cancer, and so would patients with heart disease. So if you look at it, we have a crisis, and the clinic says we've got to help lead this. We aren't afraid of decreased hospital volumes. We need to stop the increase in volumes if we're going to have a viable society and be able to spend on social programs, on education, on research, things that will generate more jobs in the future. We need to change this or we're in real trouble. And that's really why I wrote the book, because it is, everyone can get a do-over. It isn't just the Cleveland Clinic employees. It is, you can create your own culture and your own feeling of vitality and wellness by doing these seven steps, and it just isn't that tough.
And we really need to. You know, those statistics are staggering when you think about, and that's just one condition, one disease, diabetes. I mean, if you start adding all the other things, the other conditions and diseases that will be increasing as well in the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, if you look at the six, if you look at those six conditions I said, five plus one more, six conditions I said, they use the entire GDP of the country in 2050 if
yes.
we don't change, which obviously
yes.
is undoable. So we will either get rationing or we will have to change. And hopefully we'll get what I call rational and change so we don't have the chronic disease we have now.
And do you see your model actually being, you know, adopted? Is this, you know, are you seeing the kind of change that, and the interest in what you are doing with other corporations, with other hospitals, with other, you know, businesses?
we're progressively seeing more and more. It's not 100% uptake. But, for example, Bon Secours, which is a large healthcare system in Richmond, is now doing exactly what the Cleveland Clinic is doing, and we're both getting outstanding results. Another one of the health systems is also at Baylor is doing the same thing. So we're seeing some of the big systems following. We haven't seen yet a lot of the smaller systems following pursuit, but we are seeing big systems, and we're seeing middle-sized and even larger companies. So we're working with Lafarge, which makes cement and gravel, and we're working with GE and IBM on their own healthcare processes, so that their employees can be, if you will, encouraged and have fun getting healthier. And I think that's the message, where we seem to be able to spread this. We don't have enough data for sure, but it looks like we seem to be able to spread it so that many in America can live with less medical expense and live with more vitality and more energy.
Very inspiring. Very inspiring. So we probably have time for one more of your seven secrets. We've talked about two of them. What would be the next one?
We probably don't have time for food, but one we do have time for is passion and purpose in life. So one of the things that happens when you see people who come to your office, come to my office, and are, if you will, have lost their, if you will, verve for life, is many of them say, oh, I need to get healthier, I just don't have energy, I don't have energy. And what they're really telling you is they don't have a passion or purpose that they want to save energy, that they want to release their energy for. And so one of the people who lets me tell about her, because she's in the book, is someone named Tawny. Tawny lived a busy life, had a child or two, I can't remember now, but lived a very busy life, and then had some if you will, disagreements with her spouse, and started to gain weight over the stress of that, and came to me literally about 80 pounds overweight, not having done exercise in a whole bunch of years, et cetera. And so I said to her, what's your passion or purpose in life? And she said, I don't have one. And so I said, okay, what I want you to do is to work up to walking 10,000 steps a day and then gradually develop a passion and purpose. And she said, well, how am I going to do that? And so we had her try, I said, okay, pick 10 or 15 things you at some time thought you might like to do in life and try them and see if any one of them really gets you jazzed. Well, she, to our surprise, started a walking group. So she walked for whatever it was, 10 minutes the first day, and she said, I'm going to walk from 6 to 6:45 every morning. And she, even in Cleveland, where it's pretty darn cold some days and even icy, she started the walking group, and believe it or not, it's now been 6 years, and she hasn't missed a day with the walking group, walks 10,000 steps, has lost around 40 pounds, and her purpose is now to help other people get healthy through this walking group. And so she's retired and has done that and has gotten a verve back for life. So there are many things you can do, but that's one of the – I mean, she just found a purpose in helping others.
And I think that's just such an important point, because we are – I believe we're all here to express our own unique talents, purpose, and to serve. And if we are not doing that, it's like something's missing in our reason for living. And when you can reconnect with it, each day is a joy. Without it, each day is a depressing, monotonous experience. And that's part of our journey, is to find that spark again.
Oh, I so agree with you. I mean, it is, and it is, it is so easy. We've gone through, I mean, I had another retired gentleman who, when his wife died, he went into a serious depression and was losing everything. And so he just started doing different activities 1 hour a week. And that was, even to get him to do that was pushing. But he went to a cooking club one day, and he decided he loved cooking. And he literally learned, I mean, he didn't even know how to use a knife, or maybe even not even know how to use a fork. But anyway, he literally has become a master chef and is teaching
wow.
others, and found his purpose in something that he said, you know, a guy never go into the kitchen. So that's not true anymore, obviously, but that was his thought process. He's and of that era, that was true. And so he had found it in learning how to cook, and has a passion for cooking. And then last year, I mean, he did this for about 3 or 4 years, and then last year he found a new mate in one of the cooking classes he began to teach.
Don't you love it? You know, you must feel so much gratitude for yourself, for what you have done, what you have initiated, and the amazing changes that are happening all around you and your community there at the Cleveland Clinic and around the world. I mean, you're through your realage.com and your radio show, you're just touching millions upon millions of people and making a difference. It's a good feeling, isn't it?
Oh, and you too. It is, thank you for letting me be on, because it is my passion and my purpose is to help other people get healthier and avoid disability, and they really can do it, and that's the whole message. And so, yeah, so I think I told you about the producer on that, the executive producer
mm-hmm.
on the TV
mm-hmm.
show. Well, believe it or not, while I was on the plane going there, the guy next to me grabbed 6 sugars to put in his coffee, and so I started talking to him about why that's a risk, and he said, I just found out I do have type 2 diabetes, so I started to go through it. Well, the two people in front of me stood up and said, you know, you're Dr. Roizen, aren't you? And I said, yes. And they said, well, believe it or not, we watched the show you're about to be on tomorrow very religiously, and you changed our lives, so we want, you know. And, you know, it is remarkable. So I feel very fortunate. And you probably, Cheryl, should and do too.
Yes.
And it's just wonderful to be able to help people get more energy to do what they want to do in life.
Because that really is the greatest achievement in life, being able to really make a difference in other people's lives.
Well, I feel blessed to be able to be on your show, so thank you for letting me be here.
Well, we've had a great time. I so appreciate your time and being here. And you've inspired me, Dr. Mike. So I have been doing more or less 10,000 steps, but I haven't been committed to the full 10,000. So that's one of the gifts you've given me today. I am going to go and do the 10,000 every day. I'm committing to that. So there you
Fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic. And if you want to, I think you've got my email address. If
mm-hmm.
not, you've got at least my phone number, and we'll give it to you. And so if you want to report into me every day, I'm good for that.
I will do that. And I really appreciate the wonderful work you're doing, and it's such a pleasure to have you here. And for everyone listening, please go get a copy of This Is Your Do-Over, The 7 Secrets to Losing Weight, Living Longer, and Getting a Second Chance at the Life You Want. Thank you, Dr. Mike, for the wonderful interview and the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Okay, and everyone listening, take up a challenge. Find one of those strategies that work for you, and remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.